Blog Talk Radio.
This is All About Wine, the talk show dedicated to the wine industry since 2009. Featuring winemaker, cellar master, vineyardist, and tasting expert, Ron.
Basically, what we're trying to do on this program is just trying to educate people and trying to make wine less confusing and more friendly.
From coast to coast and around the world.
You know, we really have had some neat people on the program. I love that.
Post your questions and comments during the live show on our Facebook page at www.facebook.com/allaboutwinebtr. Again, that's www.facebook.com/allaboutwinebtr. And now, All About Wine is on. Here's Ron.
Hey. Thank you, bus people. Bus people are outside of Mike's studio right now instead of here, because here they heard that the rains were coming in, and so they went over there and said about.
I was wondering who those people were. Wow.
Yeah, those are the bus people.
Yeah. Well, they said it's supposed to rain.
I said, yeah, it's supposed to rain. They said, well, we don't want to sit outside and drink in the rain, so we're going to go over in front of Mike's studio. I said, oh, that
right.
Sounds like a very good plan. have a guest tonight. Before we get into the guest, though, I do want to make a couple of comments here. Number one, our heartfelt sympathies go out to the people in New Orleans and Louisiana and that area there. Hurricane Francine was only a Category 2 when it hit. But, oh, there we go. That's better. Only a Category 2 when it hit, but it was still pretty devastating. So I understand no lives were lost, but a lot of damage. So anything that you can do, send. I'm sure they can use a whole lot of stuff. Go through American Red Cross. That is a reputable thing. And don't, you know, if you see different things begging for monies or stuff like that, just go through the American Red Cross. They do a decent job, and you know you're not going to get ripped off. And while you're at it, add Southern California to your list, too, of things that you might donate to. Wildfires down there has absolutely devastated some areas, destroyed lots and lots of homes, and as far as I know, no one has been killed in that either. There's been no deaths in the wildfires, but it has really devastated a lot of areas down there. So, again, if you're so inclined, go through the American Red Cross. I'm sure that they have funds set up for either one or, you know, both of them actually. And so do that, and it's a good thing. We're in this country together, and we can always help out each other. As far as I'm concerned, we should take care of us before we take care of some of these other countries around the world. But, you know, that's just my opinion. But if you get a chance, though, I'm sure there's things online and all that, but if you are going to donate through a reputable company. All right, we have a guest tonight, speaking of California. This is Jenny Murphy, and she's in Sonoma, that area, Sonoma County. And she's the winemaker and owner and founder of Oxley Graham Wines. And she's in the green room, so we'll have to bring her out, take her away from all of our good food there and everything, and bring her out so she can be on the show. So swallow, Jenny, whatever you're eating, so we can talk. So. Welcome to the show, Jenny. Thanks for joining us tonight.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Oh, good. I'm glad you were able to take the time and join us. A lot of stuff I want to ask you. And before we get into that, you are located in Sonoma County, correct?
I am, yes. I have a custom crush here in Sonoma County, but I source fruit kind of from all over the North Coast here.
Oh, okay. Very good. Very good. So all of it is North Coast, North Coast grapes.
So as far south as Santa Cruz Mountains and as far north as very far north in Mendocino County. So
oh, wow.
A good widespread.
it sounds like it. Those are some big counties out there in that area. First, I'm going to let you talk for a while and tell us where you started, how you got here, what led you to wine, what did you do before? Because the winery's only been open, 2 years? And so it's not like you've been doing it forever and ever. So tell us all about you and how you got to where you are now.
Yeah, so I have been making wine now for about 16 years. I'm not new to winemaking, but I am new to business owning and running my own brand. Mm-hmm. But I have definitely started out, kind of fell into it. I started out with a chem degree from UC Davis. So that was kind of, something that seemed like an easy transition, but I had no intention of kind of going into winemaking. I was planning to join the forensic science path and had done a bunch of undergrad research and done internships that were the forensic science route. But I graduated from college in 2009 and the economy was terrible, and the dream of getting a county job was dismal. So I kind of had to pivot, and that kind of became a theme for me in my career. But I pivoted, and I went to the career fair at Davis, and they had a bunch of wineries there that were looking for chemists. They wanted people to come and work in their labs for harvest, and I thought, that would be a fun little distraction until I get back on the path that I plan to be on. So I did that. I did an internship at Corbel Champagne is what I ended up taking and was in their lab for about 7 months. And I just got bit with the bug. So I loved it. I loved kind of the mix of science and outdoors and getting your hands a little sticky. And I just thought it was a blast. I got to drive around. Corbel's a pretty big winery compared to where I've been since, but I got to drive around in my golf cart and collect samples, and it was just the best. I thought it was so fun.
I can imagine. Yeah.
Yeah. So I sort of started looking for, what my next step would be. I thought I wanted to work in a big lab at a big winery that had the cool toys, and I ended up taking quite the opposite job at a lab that really didn't have a lot of instruments and really needed some work to kind of get it to the place where it should be for the quality of wines that they were making. So I ended up taking an enologist job at Paul Hobbs, which is here in Sonoma County as well. He's a well-known kind of consultant around the world. So someone that was really fun to learn from, and he was looking for a chemist to come in and kind of revamp his QC and revamp his lab. So it was a great kind of fit and a great opportunity for me to grow. And I ended up being at Paul Hobbs working alongside him and his team for 13 years. So I grew from the lab to the assistant winemaker role to the winemaker role. And ultimately to his director of winemaking for North America. So he had a few different wineries, one in New York and then two in California that I oversaw, but then remained day-to-day winemaker at his kind of home brand, Paul Hobbs. So it was a very exciting kind of growth for me in the industry to kind of learn hands-on. And, it just became that natural next step to kind of pivot and do my own thing in 2022 when I just felt like I needed to continue learning and I wanted to learn the business side of things and be in the vineyards more and work with some varietals I hadn't yet worked with. So then Oxley Graham was born and now we're here. We're in harvest number 3 right now as we speak. So yeah, it's been an exciting journey to get here, but happy to be here.
I can imagine. It sounds fun. I tell you, when I had the winery, I had a small winery, and the most enjoyable thing I think I did was work in the lab. We didn't have a whole lot of fancy equipment, but we had what we needed. And I enjoyed that so much of, you know, testing the wines and, you know, just the different things you do. I mean, you know what you do in the lab. And had an opportunity to go down to California to a great big winery down there. Well, I shouldn't say, well, yeah, it is a winery. They don't really sell direct. They sell to wineries. So, but I had a chance to go down there and spend a week with them in the lab. And it's just so fascinating. The lab part of it is, I think, one of the funnest things about having a winery.
Yeah.
Everything else tends to be work.
Yeah. I agree. I definitely, it's still my happy place in the wine world, but it's also ground zero. You know, it drives so much of what we do in the cellar and kind of what's going on with harvest picking and decisions. You know, winemakers really rely on knowing what's going on. And so I feel like the lab is definitely ground zero. I'm a winemaker that now makes a lot of wine based on taste and not numbers, but I still want to know what the numbers are. So
yeah, well, you
for
know,
me, it's kind of a good mix.
You pretty much have to. It's,
yeah.
You know, when you try, well, let's see, 100, you want to know the numbers because then when your next harvest comes in and you check the numbers on that, if it's reasonably close to what you had before, then you feel comfortable with that wine. But if the numbers start jumping all over the place, then you say, wait a minute, what's going on here? Well, and you have to really start checking stuff to find out why the numbers are so wacky. And I, you know, so I think it's really important that way. I mean, I used to do that too. I'd look at the numbers, and if it a batch was way off, I'd have to check and see why, because it, They don't go way off like that for without a reason. So yeah, I understand what you're saying there.
Yep.
So you opened Oxley Graham. Oh, and first question on that, Oxley Graham. That seems like an odd name for a winery. Where did that come from?
Yeah, so it's actually my named after my grandmother's. So Oxley is my mother's mom's maiden name, and Graham is my dad's.
Oh,
so it was kind of a paying homage to two strong women that kind of headed up our family and taught me a lot of things and how to be honest and strong and, you know, kind of laid the groundwork for what I'm doing now. So I wanted to put them at the forefront.
Very good. Yeah, well, that's a good tribute. Are either one of them still around? Are they both still alive?
No, they actually both have passed. And my granny Oxley, she passed away in 2021. And so kind of right before I started the winery. And so it all became kind of, you know, I wanted to do something that honored them. She was my last grandparent to pass. But she made it to 99, almost 100.
Wow.
So she lived a good long life. But my dog is also named Oxley. So he was born a couple days after she passed. And
oh,
so I named my puppy Oxley, and then I decided to start a winery. So
so you just
so
continued on.
Yeah. Oxley, yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's good. So Oxley Graham is from your grandparents, our grandmothers.
Yes.
Tribute to them. Oh, that, very good. You said you get wine from different vineyards in Sonoma and Mendocino. When you started in 2021, 2022, did you already know where you were going to source those grapes? Or what was your process on that?
I didn't, and I didn't really know the vineyard world all that well. I had been in production for so long that I knew how to, you know, source things like barrels and tanks and all those things. But fruit was a whole kind of new rodeo for me.
Yeah.
But I knew that I wanted to make Pinot Noir. That was sort of my favorite varietal I worked with during my time at Paul Hobbs, and one of my favorite varietals to drink. And so I knew that I wanted to make Pinot Noir and kind of make Pinots that were different expressions of different areas of kind of the coast, North Coast.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why I went to Mendocino to find Pinot up there. And then I have a Sonoma Coast Pinot, and I've added a couple as I've gone here. There's a Santa Cruz and a Russian River. And so Pinot is kind of the backbone to the winery. And I sort of lovingly call the project Pinot and My Weirdos. Because I make a lot of Pinot, but then I like things that are off the beaten track a little bit. So one of the varietals I knew I wanted to work with when I started my brand was Petit Verdot. I felt like there aren't a lot of fantastic Petit Verdots out there. People tend to just blend them out into cab.
Yeah.
And I felt like I had worked on Petit Verdot for so long while I was at Paul Hobbs. And I could make a pretty darn good one. And I just felt like it deserved a day in the sun. So mm-hmm. that was something that I wanted. But I really like cool climate wines. So finding a Bordeaux varietal like Petit Verdot in cooler climates is harder than you'd think. So I didn't want to go to Napa. I didn't want, you know, some of the AVAs in Mendocino and Sonoma County are warmer. So I ended up finding this vineyard kind of totally by chance in Fountain Grove, which is actually where I live in Santa Rosa. But it's on the border of Napa. And so it's this newer AVA that is mountainous and cooler, has a little bit more of that coastal influence, but it's just a perfect place to grow it. So that was kind of exciting to find these perfect vineyard sites for what I wanted to be making. But I've just partnered with growers that are smaller. A lot of them are really supportive, really believe in what I'm doing. And, you know, it's fun to kind of work with small family-run businesses instead of big kind of, you know, hugely farmed sites. So it adds to logistical challenges for sure when you're working with small individual growers, but it definitely, I think the wines really shine through and the personalities come through. So each vineyard.
With the smaller growers too, you work with them and they work with you and they can help your expression of what you want to do. You say, you know, leave it hang on the vine a little bit longer. They would do it. Whereas big vineyards won't do that. They harvest at a certain time and that's it. And with the smaller ones, they would be more than willing to work with you on that stuff. Yeah, that's great. So you mentioned, and let's talk about your wine. You mentioned that you have Pinot Noir, which you like, and then Petit Verdot. And you're right. I enjoy a Petit Verdot, but it's almost impossible to find them because they're usually blended.
Yep.
And I know exactly what you mean. So you have those two. Any others that you are making or that you plan on making?
Yeah, so I also make a couple of whites that are a little bit different. I have a white blend that I made in 2023, so that is out in the world. But it is a blend of Chenin Blanc and Picpoul Blanc, which, again, are two. Picpoul especially is lesser known.
I'm going to interrupt. What is that second one?
Picpoul. Picpoul is how they pronounce it in France, but Picpoul is how we would say it here in the States.
Okay.
P-I-C-P-O-U-L. Yeah.
Okay. You French pronunciation threw me off there. That can.
Yeah.
Really, it did.
So, but it's a really fun blend that I've never seen those two grapes together anywhere else. And it was sort of something that was happened by accident because the Peak Pool had two very tough vintages where it grows up in Mendocino. And it froze the first year I was planning to work with it, and it didn't ripen the second year. So it kind of, the second year they called me and they said, how do you feel about Chenin Blanc? And I said, you know, I can try it. And they found me a little bit of Pick Pull in another block that had ripened. So I did this little blend and it just became this beautiful little marriage. So it's something that I definitely am now contracting for and planning to make in the future. But so that's a really fun little white blend. And then I also am making Albarino this year.
Oh, are you?
So the Albarino is from Russian River. So again, cool climate. And I plan to do it all in stainless and kind of keep the freshness of the varietal. So that'll be a fun little experiment for this year. But so a couple of interesting whites. And then my unicorn wine, what I'd really love to make in the near future is a still Pinot Meunier. So that's
hopefully
in the pipeline.
Well, you love jumping out those weird ones, don't you?
I do. I like the oddballs. But probably my favorite wine experience I've had was with a Pinot Meunier, a still Pinot Meunier. So that's something I would like to try to make here in the near future. So.
Well, you know, these are obscure grapes for seeing them on a shelf when you go on, you know, walk into wine stores or grocery stores anywhere that carries wine. These are somewhat of obscure grapes. You don't see them much or all that. And probably for a couple of reasons, there are not a lot of people grow them. And so, which leads me to, how did you find people that are growing these grapes? I mean, there's usually not a market for them, so they would not grow them. And yet you're creating a unique market for them. So how did that come about?
Yeah, so I actually have been involved in some really great groups that are kind of women in wine groups. And the first one I was a part of is called Batonnage, and it's out of Napa, but there's women in the group from all over the country and the world. But I did a mentorship program, and I was a mentee. And I worked with a woman that was a vineyard mentor, and it's kind of, vineyards are all about who you know, and it's still very old school in that way. There's not a website where you can go on and see what's available. So it's kind of getting introductions by the right people, which is something I had to learn while I started my business, how to kind of find these grapes. But I was introduced to this vineyard that's in Mendocino, the only vineyard I work with in Mendocino, and it's called Alder Springs Vineyard. And you may have seen wines coming from that site. It's a pretty well-known site, really far north in the county.
Yeah.
So they grow, Stu is the owner, and he grows all of these different oddball varietals. It's kind of his passion. He loves seeing what can grow at his site. It's this big vineyard, and they just do a spectacular job with farming. And so he has kind of everything. So when I was looking for an interesting white, I was introduced to that vineyard, and then I ended up getting Pinot, and the white blend comes from there. So I actually ironically went there looking for Chenin Blanc, and they didn't have any available. And so I ended up with Peak Pool. And then that had the two hard vintages, and I ended up with Chenin Blanc and Peak Pool. So it was kind of a happy happenstance. But so they have a lot of really cool stuff, and they also have some Pinot Meunier up there. So I know I can find it there. And we've kind of formed a good working relationship, so I think they'd be happy if I wanted to take a little bit of that fruit as well. But
I'm just thinking how big is his vineyard? I mean, with all these different grapes.
It's big.
Is it really? You know?
It is. Yeah, it's a pretty big site, but it's this beautiful, magical kind of, you go out there and you get it. Like I thought, why am I driving 2 hours north of where I live just to see this vineyard? But once you get there, you get it. And it's just gorgeous. And he tries things out. So he has this block he calls his lunatic fringe that's all these different varietals he hasn't yet planted. buddy's trying them to see if they work there. So so he's into being experimental, and they just, the team there is just spectacular. I mean, they do great work. So I've been very happy kind of partnered with them. And then my Albarino I found actually through another group I'm in, another women in wine group. And I kind of found the grower through another woman that used to own the vineyard. And it, again, it was that whole handshake deal, kind of people who knows who know people. So,
right.
So I found this Albarino, which is really uncommon in Russian River. There's not a lot of it planted. So I can think of like three vineyards that have it. I'm sure there's more, but those are the only three I know of. And I am lucky enough to get fruit from one of them. So that's been kind of special. And then I'm originally from Silicon Valley, which is about 2 hours south of where I live now. But so Santa Cruz was something that's home for me. And so I've always kind of dreamed of making a Santa Cruz Mountains Pinot. And so again, reached out to a friend who makes wine down in that area, and he kind of pointed me towards someone who might know someone. And so I found this really cool vineyard down in the Santa Cruz Mountains that I'm getting some different clones of Pinot that I get to blend, and they just are kind of letting me make this really cool field blend their site. So that's been really, really kind of cool as well. So I have a few different, I mean, really good grower partners. I work with six different vineyards.
It's been a fun
journey, yeah, but a lot of logistics and a lot of figuring out what goes where, when.
I can imagine. So you, you tend to love these, I said it earlier, obscure grape varietals. Are you going to expand your catalog to include even more, or are you think you're just going to stop at these five or six?
So I think it depends on how things go. I'm still pretty young in the industry as far as a brand goes, and I've only been selling wine for about a year. So I need to grow that, following and kind of see where sales go. So I don't want to get too big too fast, but I'd love to continue to add, you know, these really small kind of special lots. Everything I make is about 100 cases or less. So
that's all.
It's very, very tiny. Yeah, I have one blend that's my kind of Pinot blend, that's a blend of different vineyards in the Sonoma Coast, and that is about 250 cases, but everything
otherwise
else is 100 or less.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's pretty small. I mean, I'm pretty tiny, but able to kind of ship to people, and I am hoping to grow, you know, my club and things like that. So that's kind of the next step, is to get people just to try the wines and be excited about them. And then I can hopefully keep making more weird stuff or more Pinot, one or the other.
do you have a tasting room?
I do, newly. So I just moved into a new custom crush space in Santa Rosa, which is in Sonoma County. And I can now host by appointment, which is very exciting for me as a small brand to have that ability and space. So I'm hoping to kind of launch that here soon on my website for people to be able to make appointments. And if you come visit, you get hosted by me, because I'm pretty much a one-woman show. So it's only me. But so it's kind of fun to get to meet people and talk about the wines and share that joy.
Oh, I can imagine, yeah. Your Pinot Noirs, I want to go into those a little bit more here. You have two different Pinot Noirs, from what I can see. One is different lot blends. Is the other one a single lot?
Yeah. So the first vintage, 2022, I made the Alder Springs is the Mendocino Pinot. So I made a vineyard designate out of that. And then the other one is mostly from one vineyard in the Petaluma Gap called Gap Spew. But because I was trying to launch a brand and wanted to have kind of my stable backbone wine ready to go, the Sonoma Coast. But really, it's one vineyard. But in 2023, it'll be a real blend of vineyards. And that's kind of the vision for that wine, is to have a little bit of a blend that will be the bigger distributed wine that I can share with more people.
Oh,
so,
okay.
And all the wines are also named after women that have inspired me. So the Sonoma Coast is named after my mom, Dale. So she's sort of my backbone. So I thought it was fitting she be the name on the leading wine for the brand. And then Mabel is the other Pinot that's on the is currently available, and that's the Mendocino wine. And Mabel is my grandmother, the Graham portion of the label. So,
okay.
So she lived in Seattle, so I thought the furthest north vineyard made sense for her.
Oh yeah, wow.
But,
Seattle, wow.
But I am growing the Pinots, so I am adding new Pinots this fall with my release. They'll be the Santa Cruz will be released, and then in the spring I have two new wines that will be released. One that's Russian River, and then the Petaluma Gap will have its own label in the spring.
All right.
So there's that's always kind of growing.
Yeah, it is.
Go.
And you say I want to take it slow, but look at you.
No. I don't really know what slow means, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought that. Your cellar. What do you use? Are you stainless steel, you oak, French, American, Norwegian? Where do you get your oak if you do use it? How many? Tell us about your cellar.
Yeah, so I take barrels very seriously. I like everything. I am very detail oriented. I'm that chemist by nature, but I really believe that which cooper you use, which you know, there's so many different types of barrels. There's so many different people that make barrels, and each one of those people are coopers. And
right.
So I really think it's important to put the right cooper with the right wine, the right clone, the right et cetera, et cetera.
Mm.
So for me, I buy just a few new barrels a year because I'm so small, but all of the new barrels are different coopers. So I have
about
8 to 10 different coopers that I have, and some of those are neutral oak and some of those are new. But I believe in diversity. I think if you only use one cooperage, that you're kind of single-noted. So I want to use different coopers. I want to use a little bit of new in some things, maybe go all neutral in other vineyards. But everything I do is French oak. That's the only type of oak I use. And that's only on the reds. So the whites are both stainless steel fermented. The blend is done in a tank. To keep it really fresh and bright, the white blend. And then the Albarino is being done in stainless steel barrels. So I can get a little more texture, a little more mouthfeel by stirring and kind of playing with that wine a little bit in barrel. So that's sort of what I'm doing. But everything I do is native. I don't add any yeast. I don't add any bacteria. Everything is very trying to kind of let the vineyard shine through with what I'm doing.
Very natural. Naturally made.
Yes.
you mentioned something there, and I want you to explain it to me. You say you use different coopers for different wines. Well, I know barrels, and I haven't talked to a cooper on the program here, and I keep trying to. You know, I just haven't hooked up with one. I really need to do that. But The barrels have different profiles on them. If you toast them, if you don't toast them, and you know, and all that stuff. Do you look for the same signature of the barrel for the wine that you're going to use in it every single time? I mean, your Sonoma, you use this particular cooper. Are you going to be stuck with that cooper to make your Sonoma wine every time to carry over that profile?
Yes and no. So each barrel, even within the same cooper, is slightly different. So it's not like it's still an artisanal product. So it's not going to be consistent year after year. but I kind of know certain coopers may be, you know, more structure-driven, more spice-driven. Some have more florals that they produce in general. Mm-hmm. So I might try to put, you know, once used or a brand new barrel of that cooper on a wine that I want to accentuate. For example, the Mendocino wine, I have one cooper that works really well with it. I've tried, you know, different new barrels now on that wine, and there's one that just does better. And it's going to be slightly different because it's a different vintage of fruit, but, and it's a different barrel, but you're kind of getting that same savory floral aspect, which I really like. So yeah, I will find things that work well with certain vineyards and use that as a tool in making the wines, but they're always going to be slightly different just because of the nature of making wine. The vintage changes and the artisanal barrel changes. And yeah, so it's part of what's tricky, but also part of what's fun about it. But you kind of start seeing things that sometimes barrels are too powerful for certain sites. Like there's some coopers that just have too much structure, too much spice, and that's not really the direction you want, too much warmth. You don't want to go that way with certain vineyards. Where other ones, maybe you want that, that richness. So that's something that I've kind of learned with working with these barrels for years now. I kind of know how they behave for the most part. But then every time you add a new vineyard, it's a whole nother study. So it's kind of interesting. Yeah.
It would be, yeah. It creates a whole new set of rules there. Is your Pinot Noirs very tannic then? Are they made to age or are they fruity and drink now Pinot Noirs?
They're definitely age worthy, but they're not tannic. They're very different, which has been really fun kind of showing them off. The one from Mendocino is very like Burgundian in style. Very light in color, but super savory and like mouth-filling, juicy. But it's very like the acid and alcohol. The alcohol's low, and the acid is, you know, abundant. So it's going to age really well. And even just the year that it's been in bottle, it's gotten so much better. And then the Sonoma Coast is meant to be more of that crowd-pleasing kind of wine, a little more velvety, a little more tannin. But it is still very age-worthy. Not a lot of alcohol, but enough acid to kind of keep it with the fruit for longer. So that's kind of part of my philosophy, is I want to make wines that you can drink now, but that you can hold and age for a long time.
You said not a lot of alcohol on both of the wines. What is your ABV?
Yeah. For the Mendocino, it's at 12.8. So kind of under 13, and then the Sonoma Coast is low 13. So everything that I make is kind of in that 12 to 14 range, but 14 is kind of at the very upper end. And I only have like my Petit Verdot basically is 13.8. So that's the highest alcohol I have.
But that's, you know, I mean, for reds, that is rather low. I mean, a lot of California reds are pushing the envelope up to 17-18% alcohol, and it's just like it makes you shiver when you take a sip, you know.
And it's not, they don't play as well with food and they don't age as well, and so for me, making wines that are a little bit more food friendly but also age really well is kind of the goal. But I don't ever want to make a wine with low alcohol just to make a wine with low alcohol. It has to have the balance and it has to, you know, be a full-bodied wine still.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of a fun experiment to kind of play with it. But because you want to harvest the fruit when it's phenolically ripe, but you also want to harvest it before they're raisins. And once you get these really high alcohols with these, you know, really high sugars in the grapes that make really high alcohol, you're getting kind of dimpled fruit that are starting to raisin. And so for me, it's kind of that, you got to get it when it's ready, but before it starts to turn into a raisin. So
well, your growers
in a year like this, it's very hot.
Yeah, oh, yeah, yeah. Well, your growers that you use, you explain that to them? You know, I'm going to make a wine that is lower in alcohol, so I want you to harvest at a time when I can do that. Will they work with you on something like that?
Yeah, so they've been really great. And there's only ever sometimes conversation of logistics. Generally, when I say the fruit's ready, they're ready to pull it. But, you know, you're playing that. You've got to call it, you know, a week to half a week to a week in advance just to get the crew that you want at the vineyard. Because I'm so small, I have less buying power, if you will. So they're less motivated to get out there.
Yeah,
but,
that's the key to it. You are small and you don't have the monies to motivate them. And
pretty much all my growers, they have, you know, contracted teams that will come out and do the work, and they've all been so easy to work with. So, and I had one vineyard last year that I felt like we maybe waited too long, and part of that was me because I wasn't as familiar. It was the first year I'd worked with the vineyard. So this year I talked to the grower and I said, we're going to pull it earlier. I want to kind of walk it and I need to, but it's every year you work with a vineyard, you get a little better because you're getting more used to the site and how it behaves. And that particular site has rows of vines that grow in two different directions, north and south and east and west, which can make it really tricky to pull it all at the same time because they're getting different levels of sun at different times. And so
wind and everything,
so that was part of the, And it's so small. Again, I get that whole vineyard, but they want to get one crew out to pick the whole thing in one night because it's not big enough that, you know, they can come out multiple times. So it makes it a little tricky, but I think we nailed it this year. So that was kind of a good pat on the back all of us this year.
Are you hands on at all the vineyards?
Somewhat. So for most of them, because I'm not the owner, I can kind of make comments and suggest things. But some of them I'm getting like 2 tons out of a block that a lot of people are getting fruit out of, so I don't really have, you know, I can't say drop this much fruit or, but then other ones I have a little more control because I'm getting the whole block or I'm getting the whole vineyard. So it's a conversation with the grower and myself kind of as we go, but I am luckily working with a lot of people that I trust, and I lean into their expertise because vineyards are something I'm, you know, continually learning about, and I don't consider myself an expert yet. Production is really where I shine, but it's been really fun to kind of get out there and understand what's going on. And I feel like each year I've progressed and gotten better at making the pit calls and all of that. So it's been a fun journey out in the vineyard.
Well, if each year you're getting better making the call when to pick, then that would obviously interpret into a little bit of an improvement in your wines every year. So, that's a good thing. Well, we've discussed your two Pinot Noirs in, you know, in depth there and the ABVs and how they're made. Your whites, you know, your blends and your Albarino, what are the alcohol and tell us about those.
Yeah. So the white blend is the only one that I've made and bottled. The Albarino is currently fermenting in cellar right now and it smells delicious, but it hasn't finished fermenting. So I can't tell you what the alcohol is, but the white blend that I made in 23, it's at 12.1% alcohol. So it's very low. But it's just a really fresh kind of, it's that Chenin and Picpoul blend. And so the Chenin brings all these like pomaceous fruits and florals and creaminess. And then the Picpoul is normally a varietal used for Rhone blends, as the acid component, because things like Roussanne and Marsanne are not very acidic. So the Picpoul comes in and kind of drives that blend. So it's been really interesting to see it with Chenin. Because it has more of this like saltine cracker kind of green apple, just solid acid. So it's a really beautiful wine. Yeah.
Cinnamon Black has that the green apple bite to it, aroma to it. I mean, that's one of the things I love about the Cinnamon Blanc.
Yeah. Yeah, so the white blend has been probably one of my most popular wines since it's been released. People are just loving it, but it's also been a hot summer. So it's perfect for, you know, sitting out on your porch and drinking a glass, or it has been paired with a wine dinner. I'm in the shop in Tiburon, which is a town south of me. And he's been a great supporter and been pushing that white blend. And so he paired it with a Mediterranean dish and a dinner, and it just pairs so well with food. So it's just been really fun. It's been fun to kind of have a white that's so different. I made, in my previous position at Paul Hobbs, I made so much Chardonnay that I really didn't want to make Chardonnay anymore. And so it's been fun to make this white that's just something so different than anything I've made. So it's been kind of fun, but it has malic acid in it still. I didn't take it through, so it just has this really beautiful kind of brightness, and it's all stainless steel. So, yeah, so it's kind of a fun little summery wine, and I'm hoping the Albarino will be kind of a good complement to it with a little more texture and a little more cream, but still that same energy and freshness as the white blend.
You're going to continue making your white blend then. That's going to be one of the wines on the...
I am, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's been so popular. I was going to go back to just doing a pick pull, but this has been so popular, and I don't want to scrap it just yet. So, so now I'm contracted for the blend. But
if you go back to the pick pull, it's going to be too acidic, I think, because, like you said, it carries a lot of acid in the wine, and... with that blend, you're balancing that out a little bit more there. So,
yeah,
staying with the blend seems to be the way to go.
Yeah, I think so.
One of the things that was mentioned to me, and when I was first contacted and we corresponded about having you on the show, was the fact that you are real big at promoting women in the wine industry. And I try to do that as much as I can, too, on this end. I love to get women on the show and tell us about it. But one of the things, women are seriously underrepresented in the wine industry, as you are well aware of. your groups and stuff like this, it sounds to me like it is changing quite a bit out there in California. Am I not mistaken?
Yeah, I think I definitely think there's more opportunities that people are kind of embracing, you know, women in the industry. And it's still really difficult. Like, it's still definitely a male-dominated industry. There's a lot of, you know, people underestimate what women can do as far as, you know, pulling hoses in a cellar and setting up all the pumps and all that stuff. I think there's just, I mean, it still is that way. Like, women belong in the lab and women belong, you know, maybe in winemaking, but not in the cellar. In the tasting room and marketing. The amount of times that I went to events and was asked if I, on behalf of Paul Hobbs, I was asked if I was in marketing or sales, and they just couldn't believe I was the winemaker. So that would become a little frustrating, but it's just the people can't wrap their heads around it. But I think that it's getting better. And I think that there's a lot of these great organizations out there that are promoting women, and, you know, you're stronger with more numbers. And so there's just these great networks that I think form, and we want to see each other succeed. And I mean, that doesn't mean we don't want to see other people succeed, but, you know, it's just this thing where, you know, it's been hard and you want to be there to kind of help the next generation or even the current generation. But I think I found that, you know, in my career, sometimes it seems like it's so competitive in the wine industry. Like, people don't want to talk. They don't want to share ideas.
Really?
Because they don't want you to have a leg up. But when I've gotten together with these women in wine groups, it's more collaborative, and people aren't really scared to share quote unquote secrets, because you're not in my head and I'm not in your head, and we have different palates and we're going to end up with different wines. So it's not really this competitive thing that people try to make it out to be. And I think that's been really refreshing for me as a winemaker to say, hey, we can really work together and all be successful and root each other on. And it doesn't have to be this weird competitive atmosphere,
wow.
which I think has been the driving force in the industry for so long. So,
yeah.
so that's
you
been
said,
really cool.
You said something that really surprised me. You said that you get this silent treatment when it comes to talking about different things in the industry. I always experienced just the opposite. But again, I'm male, and so therefore maybe that's the reason too. People are more willing to open up. But I've always found that in the wine industry, people will talk about their wines and stuff, knowing, like you just said, everybody's palate is different. You're not going to make your wine the same as mine, so I don't feel threatened. And
yeah.
so why not talk about it? And, you know, it seems like that would be more prevalent than being quiet about it and not saying anything about it and trying to hide your, quote, trade secrets and stuff like that. You know, so.
Yep.
It just, but
I think it's changing. And I think the younger generation of winemaker that's kind of starting up, I think, you know, with all the social media and all that stuff that's happening, people just, things do seem a little more open. So I think that that's been a really kind of good thing, is people are more interested, and people are interested, you know, in learning how, what happens in a cellar and how is wine made. And so I think we have all these great tools now to kind of share those stories and let people in. So I think that
yeah,
that's kind of a fun thing.
It's a good point too, because websites tend to elaborate more about what's going on too. And that's, people are interested in that. I mean, I've been, this is a good example of the show. I mean, we get ourselves a fair amount of listeners, and it's because I think people are interested in what you do and what other people do in association with wine and stuff. And I think it's a subject that people like to hear about, and to not talk about it is counterproductive, if you will.
Yeah, I agree. Well, and I think being transparent, I think that's a big thing that the industry is going through right now with the whole health craze and people wanting, you know, sugar. I went to the seminar recently and people think that wine has sugar in it, but most wines don't have sugar, you know, like we're not adding sugar, we're fermenting it out. But there are wineries that do add sugar, and there's wineries that add a lot of stuff that people have no idea what they're doing. And so I think that kind of transparency would help a lot of the smaller kind of wineries that are doing right by the land and the wines and making, you know, good, solid wines that are not bad for people to drink. So I think that would help us as an industry as well to be transparent. But
what do you think about the new trend or the new talk now about having full disclosure on a label of what's in the wine? What is your thought on that?
I'm fine with it as a producer, because I really don't add anything other than grapes and tartaric acid and some sulfur. So for me, it would be very easy to add that. The only thing I have hesitation with is visually how it would look, because I'm all about the package and the label and tradition of it. But as far as being transparent in that way, I have no issues. And I think the wineries that are doing it already, like Ridge, and there's a couple others, that it's nice. It's nice to just see it on a label and people know what they're drinking. I think that helps a lot of consumers feel better about the product.
Yeah, that's very true. I think the consumer needs to be educated on what some of the terms are, though. And you know, because it's so easy for, what's that? That has to be bad for you, and not really pursue it or understand what it's used for. I mean, things are used in wine that is not harmful or anything. It's just to stabilize and other things like that. And I think people need to understand that. So, Mike, do you have any questions or comments or anything for Jenny?
I don't. I was going to, so you graduated in 2009. I'm going to go all the way back here. Before you went mm-hmm. or when you decided to go to UC Davis and start your degree there, is there anything you would have changed in that path and gotten where you are today? Is there anything you would have done differently, or is it you're pretty much good with the way everything was in the start?
Yeah, I'm pretty much good with it. I always really loved science, and I mm-hmm. think chemistry was something that just fascinated me because I'm more of a visual learner, and so chemistry mm-hmm. weirdly was very visual more than other sciences. But I probably, if I had known that I was on this path for winemaking, I might have taken some wine classes while I was at Davis. It would have been a great opportunity. And I also okay. might have or done some food science stuff because I just find path really interesting as well. But I am pretty happy with the journey that I took to get here.
Oh, sure.
As far as schooling. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Yeah, that was it. I just thought it's interesting. Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah.
Do your parents still live in where you grew up?
They do. Yeah. My parents live in San Jose, Silicon Valley. Oh, my dad was an engineer there for his whole career. So that's how they ended up in the Bay Area. But actually, my mom grew up in Berkeley. So she's kind of born and bred in the Bay Area. But
oh, okay.
Yeah.
I lived a number of years in Concord.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so I'm familiar with the Bay Area. It's so different than Southern California. It's like two different states, which they should do, by the way. But
yeah, they're very different. It's very true.
Yes, they definitely are. You mentioned something earlier, and I kept thinking, my mind keeps going back to it, that you lost a crop that was in Mendocino because of a freeze.
Yeah. So in 2022, that vineyard in particular, it's really far north, and so blooming and buds were bursting. It snowed, and it just wiped out. They lost like 90% of their crop that year.
Oh, I can't.
But
imagine.
It was just a really unfortunate weather event as everything started blooming. So.
Did they get winter snows there every year?
Most years, yeah. They'll get snow in the winter. And then they have an interesting pest pressure of bears there, which is the only vineyard I work with that has that particular issue. But the bears will come out and start eating all the Viognier first, and then they move into Pinot. So you'll get a phone call from them, and they say, the bears are out. You better come get your grapes. So it's pretty cute. Stu, the owner, says that he has the fanciest clientele because they show up in fur coats. But
I never thought about bears. I mean, there's all sorts of stuff that, you got deer and you got raccoons, you got rabbits. I never thought about bears coming.
I know. That's the first vineyard I've worked with where that's a real concern. They work through the nets and they just go after the grapes.
Yeah, that's funny. It's bad, but that's still funny.
Yeah, I mean, it's a pest you can't really, get rid of,
That's right. You can't go out
there
and go, shoo, shoo. Yeah. Like deer, you just walk out in the field and they run away, but,
Yeah, I don't think I'd want to confront a bear. I'd be like, you finish that Viognier. I'll come back later.
Right. Let me know when you're done.
Yeah.
Definitely. Bears, that's amazing.
No.
And then they're out fattening up for the winter anyway, so.
Right. Yep.
Sitting right there for them to snack on. Why not? Before we leave, Jenny, I want you to give all the information of, well, first, before I do that, I want to talk about your podcast.
Yeah.
you do a podcast. Tell us about this podcast. What does it involve?
I don't do a regular podcast. I've been on a few podcasts, but I don't have my own yet.
Well, I thought I saw it. I was going through all sorts of different stuff for Oxley Graham and.
I've been on a few, but I don't have a regular time slot yet.
Oh, I thought you did. No. Wow, I was looking at it. I just misread it. So you've been on different ones. So tell us all the information about how to get in touch with you and how people can listen to the podcast that you've guest on, your website, Facebook, social medias of all sorts and type, how they can contact you if they're up in that area and they want to have a tasting with the winemaker and owner, all the stuff that people need to know.
Yeah, so my website's probably the first line of attack, and it is just Oxley, OXLEE, Graham, GRAHAM, Wines, with an S, .com. And on there you can kind of find everything, the wines for sale, how to contact us, and that's the best way to book an appointment for tasting is through that website. I'll list soon a link for making appointments, but if you want to do it before I get there, the contact, everything, like I said, comes directly to me. I'm a one-woman show, so I make it look like there's a bunch of us, but it's really just me. So the website's the best place to go. But I also have an Instagram that I've been posting videos, and you get to see pictures of Oxley the dog and things like that. So that's just at Oxley Graham Wines. Is our handle. We have a Facebook page. It's just linked to the Instagram, but that's Oxley Graham Wines is our page on Facebook. And that's kind of the main things. If you want to email me directly, you can email me Jenny, JENNIE, at OxleyGrahamWines.com.
No.
But that's those are our main points. Yeah.
Yeah.
But the website
all right.
will take you to all of those places. So that's kind of the best place to check out first.
I was checking out your Instagram account. A lot of pictures there. A lot of and really good pictures there of the vineyards and you know, fermentation and people that, you know, having fun with the wines, all that. There's all sorts of cool stuff there. So if anyone wants to are visual and they want to see the pictures, and the Instagram place is a good place to go. So
yeah. And we'd love a follow. we like getting followed on Instagram. It's fun.
Yeah. There you go. I signed up for your e-letter, right before the show. So All About Wine will be getting your,
Oh, great. We send out a newsletter. Nope. So I got to start working on that.
Okay.
But our blog on our website has all our old newsletters too, so you can get fully caught up on all things Oxley Graham.
Oh, good. I'll have to spend some more time on it then. I just I breezed through it earlier today, and then I figured I'd be talking to you and find out all this stuff, and so I didn't read it in depth.
Yeah.
I'll have to go back now and start looking at it. So, Jenny, thank you so very much for taking the time out, well, this afternoon for you, this evening for us, and visiting with us. And nothing but the best of luck to you and all of your ventures. If I'm ever out in California in the Northern Bay Area, I will definitely give you a call and set up an appointment and come out and visit
with
you.
Yeah, that would be great.
I look forward to it myself.
Yeah, thank you so much. Yeah, thank you for having me, and I'd love to host you if you come out this way.
I will look forward to that, and again, thanks for taking the time to visit with us tonight.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Bye now.
Bye.
Okay. And.
Okay. There we go.
She jumped into that with both feet. I mean, opening up a place and doing all that stuff and everything just her by herself. That's a lot of work. that is a lot of work.
For sure.
I mean, that's a lot of work. best of luck to her. It'd be fun to go out and visit. That's beautiful country up there, though. Sonoma and especially on up into Mendocino and all that area is very beautiful country. So different than Southern California. That's why I say they should be two different states. But you probably heard the rain here all during the show. It stopped for about 2 or 3 minutes, and then it started again. It has been raining the entire time I've been on this show.
I have no idea. Had no idea.
Been here? Okay. It's been pretty loud here.
I checked our radar. Local area doesn't go out that far. I didn't scan, but I saw like on the off the screen it was like lightning. So I thought, okay, something's coming in here. We're supposed to get some heavy rains tomorrow, as they said it's going to start creeping in tonight. But I thought for sure I'd open the app up and there's a bunch of thunderstorms and stuff, but not yet. So
I was a little concerned that I might get some lightning. But this is just rain. I haven't heard any thunder, any lightning flashes or anything. So just a band of rain.
Good.
Yeah.
I'll take that. We'll take that. Right. they can keep the thunderstorms.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. So we have another one down in the books here.
We have another guest next week. I should have this stuff dug out instead of waiting until the end of the show and talking about it.
September 19th.
I'm busy talking with a guest, and so I don't think about digging this stuff out. That's my excuse. Mm-hmm. September the 19th, we got Roslyn from Fog Crest. I think Roslyn was scheduled one before. And yes, she was. Roslyn was scheduled on August the 15th, and we had Blog Talk Radio issues. And she's rescheduled. She's going to be with us on next Thursday. So I'll have to get a hold of them. And let's see what we got coming up here. Oh, we missed. The 9th was International Box Wine Day, and the 10th was National Port Wine Day. And then the 11th was Patriots Day. You all probably know that. Another the rest of the month. California Wine Month is this month. Illinois Wine Month is this month. And Missouri Wine Month is this month. These are all happening now. Before we sign off, let me see if I can't find them here. I had an email from California, from the Wine Institute. Here it is. California Wine Institute sent me a email, and they mentioned things that were going on this month. Today is what, the 12th? So let me tell you what's happening this next week here. Lodi, the annual Lodi Grape Festival, is the 12th through the 15th, which the San Joaquin County's gather for the grape harvest. They've been doing this for over 80 years there. They have all sorts of entertainment, tastings with 9 local wineries, food, grape and commodity murals, competitive exhibits, carnival, all sorts of stuff. So that's Lodi. Central Valley, today, the 12th, this is in Paso Robles, and they've got 50 wine producers and tasting there. But that area is all the time. You can always go in there. Sonoma County, coming up the 19th to the 21st, has a formerly is known as Sonoma County Wine Auction. Now it's called the Sonoma County Wine Celebration. And let's see what else we've got here coming up soon. But there's all sorts of stuff going on in California. It's California Wine Month. September is California Wine Month. And there are lots of things happening throughout the month all over California. You can go to the California Wine Institute and check out the calendar there. So if you are in California traveling around there, then check out that. And there's lots of stuff happening there all over the state for the wine month. So, yeah, it's some cool stuff going there. September is when they had they closed two or three streets down in San Francisco and had a big wine tasting. A bunch of wineries represented a big wine tasting there, too. I want to say it was September, if I remember correctly. They used to do it every year. I used to love going to that. That was really a tremendous amount of fun. So,
mm-hmm.
So there you go. There's things to do in California. Missouri Wine Month. I'm sure there's events. There's wineries all over Missouri, St. Louis, Kansas City, different areas around there. And then Illinois has got a bunch of wineries in the southern part of Illinois. Along the Ohio River, there's a lot of wineries and a lot of great soil in that area there. During the Ice Age, the ice came down and pushed all the soil down to that area there, and it's just fantastic soil now, hills and stuff like that. So Missouri, California, and Illinois, this is wine month for those places. And so if you're in any of those places, check it out.
Okay. Very good. We will close the show now at 8:12 p.m. Eastern Time. We'll be back next Thursday, that's September 19th, with our guest again, as he mentioned, at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. Join us live or listen to us on the archives. We appreciate you tuning in and listening to the show. Do you have any comments or anything, or if you'd like to be?
Listen to it on Flightline Radio.
Flightline Radio on Thursdays and Saturdays.
There you go. Saturday afternoon around 1 o'clock. Yeah.
Thank you. 12 o'clock. If you are, questions, if you have any questions or comments or anything about the show, or you want to be a guest, be sure to email Ron directly at allaboutwine101@gmail.com. And he will read your email and we'll see about putting you on the show, or at least, if you have a question or something about wine, let us know that way and have it answered. Have a great weekend ahead and a good week, and we appreciate it. And be safe, and we'll talk to you all next Thursday. Thank you.
Y'all be safe. I'll show up. We'll see you next week.
Thank you.
This concludes tonight's broadcast of All About Wine with your host, Ron. For show information, links to All About Wine on Twitter and Facebook, or to be a guest on this show, visit the show website at www.allaboutwinebtr.com. Archived shows are available for download on iTunes or on our show page at blogtalkradio.com/allaboutwine. Thank you for listening. Drink responsibly, and we'll see you next time on All About Wine.
It's X. It's not Twitter. X, not Twitter.
X. 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 You know, they go, it's X, formerly known as Twitter. And I saw a thing down there saying, we know it's X. You don't need to tell us it was formerly Twitter anymore. It's X.
Okay.
Yeah.
Take that out of it. All right, green room. And then I guess we're done. I go to the...